Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Boy, is there a lot of intelligence to be briefing about here, and in fact, a lot of discussion of what the intelligence community of the United States is up to at the moment, specifically with respect to the takedown, and I think that's one term for it. Others have used more colorful terms like political assassination of Lieutenant General Michael Flynn until earlier this week, the national security advisor to President Donald Trump. One of the people who's been doing exceptionally important investigative journalism on this subject is our first guest. He is Adam Credo. His national security beat is the required reading of our time at the Washington Free Beacon. He has been reporting on a number of different angles concerning this story, and I'm really thrilled to be able to catch up with him and discuss several of them with him in this short period of time. Adam Credo, it's good to have you. Welcome back, as always, to Secure Freedom Radio.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, let's just sort of do some level setting, as they say in the military, on what we know about the role that has been played by, it appears, both former and present intelligence officials, Adam Credo, in this unhappy story, from my point of view, of the dismissal of, or resignation, I should say, of Lieutenant General Flynn.
Sure. So essentially, look, What we're seeing here is that the Trump administration at this point is still building itself, and there are a certain number of Obama administration holdovers, not just in the general government, but also in sensitive intelligence positions. There is also a cast of characters that once served in the White House who have made it very clear that their goal is to undermine Trump on the foreign policy front, and they've started press operations aimed at this type of thing. They include Ben Rhodes, who we know from pushing the Iran nuclear deal, and other individuals that kind of worked under that guise for Rhodes. And essentially, in December, before Trump was inaugurated, it seems that the Obama White House had started to selectively leak information and damaging things about Flynn in a selective manner to their friends in the press. That would include the New York Times, NBC, the Washington Post, CNN, CBS, these types of news outlets. And these type of news outlets really hammered that. Now, after the Obama administration left, these officials continued this campaign. And I would say that there is a level of teamwork between these faceless, nameless, deep state individuals that work in the intelligence community, have access to classified material, and these fellows who are now outside of the administration, but still very close with a lot of their allies in the press. That right there is the recipe to take down somebody like Michael Flynn.
Yeah, and conceivably others as well. Let me ask you about Ben Rhodes. You've been one of those who's been particularly, I think, effective in exposing what he called the echo chamber, famously in a, well, I guess, a moment of braggadocio to the New York Times Sunday Magazine about 6 months or so ago, I think. He was talking about it in the context of how he had basically perpetrated what my friend Fred Flights, who will be with us shortly, calls national security fraud in terms of selling the Iran deal. Adam Credo, some of your reporting suggests that part of what's going on here with respect to Flynn in particular, but the Trump administration more generally, may be a rearguard action aimed at protecting that deal. And of course, the regime that has benefited massively from it, as you've reported, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Talk a little bit about that angle to the story, if you would.
Well, sure. What I've heard from multiple sources that I've spoken to, both inside and outside of the White House and those close to it, have essentially told me that one of the main goals in kind of kneecapping Trump administration on a larger national security front was going after Flynn because he wanted to release a lot of these secret Iran side deals. There are many of them, and even though they're unclassified, they're treated in a classified manner. People cannot actually take a look at them, even members of Congress with proper clearance. So,
and before we leave that, though, Adam, why is that? Why, if they're unclassified, why do you think this, or why are you being told that this information is not being made available, at least to members of Congress, for crying out loud, if not to the public?
Well, it's very clear. The Obama administration wanted to hide things that they thought might lead people to, in some ways, rightfully conclude that this Iran nuclear deal was bad, that there were massive giveaways to Iran, that there was $2 billion in cash to be given to Iran, that there were a level of side deals, including rolling back sanctions and inspections regimes that might be less than impressive, these types of things.
I've even been told, Adam, and I don't know if you would credit this, that green cards were given in the mix to Iranian officials. I mean, what we know about this deal was bad enough. It's hard to imagine that there's that much that's still undisclosed that would cause people to think that what might have been an acceptable deal would suddenly be terrible. It was a terrible deal to begin with. The Iranians, you've reported, are also making threats about having any of this information come to light. Tell us about that.
Well, sure, they are. They're warning the Trump administration against disclosing this. They claim this could potentially violate the deal. I don't personally see anywhere in the deal where that would actually constitute a violation, but yet they're making this claim. And one, this is an effort to ensure the deal continues. The Iranians might be genocidal and maniacal, but they love money and they want to continue to get money from the open economy that the deal has kind of given them.
Or at least open access to the West's economies, if not internally.
Well, yes, precisely. And I think one of the larger things here that connects back to Flynn is Flynn wanted to publish these secret side deals, make them public. The deal with the former Obama administration here and its allies who are still in government, this deep state, is really about keeping the Trump administration off balance, handicapping them by going after individuals like Flynn. And the net benefit to these Obama loyalists is that the Trump administration is playing defense, dealing with controversies, and therefore cannot enact their own foreign policy vision, such as revealing these documents.
Yeah, and perhaps in turn properly shredding this deal. Adam Credo is our guest from the Washington Free Beacon. Adam, I just wanted, before we run out of time, to ask you to talk a little bit about reporting that you've done on a man who is being described as the likely successor to Michael Flynn, Admiral Bob Harward, a Navy SEAL. He's got on paper quite an impressive resume. You have described some of the people that he would likely bring in ways that I have to tell you are very troubling to me, and I would think to the president as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. And Harward himself, as far as I can tell, has been close to Mattis and really a pretty good official in terms of the policy and what he believes in. However, what we're seeing is kind of a behind-the-scenes effort by his allies to start over, as they say, at the NSC, at the White House, to wholesale revamp it, fire a lot of the people there. And one that's worrying to current staffers who have kind of already identified the anti-Trump elements that are kind of circulating and also have started to enact their agenda in the Trump administration's policy view. So I think that we're seeing a lot in certain ways, an effort to remove some of these people and bring in Harwood's team, which, as far as I can tell, would include a certain number of these people who once proclaimed themselves as never Trumpers or those who oppose
Trump. Amazingly. I was listening to National Public Radio this morning, and they had an interview with Elliot Abrams, who was being, again, discussed for a time as the prospective number two at the State Department, and he explained why he didn't get the job was that he was, he didn't quite put it this way, but he had been a never-Trumper in the course of the earlier primary season. That apparently was held against him by the president. I would like to think that the president wouldn't want such people elsewhere in his administration, certainly not in the very important National Security Council staff. And it seems to me an argument against Bob Harward that he may be looking to bring such people in and remove people that Mike Flynn had put in place. a story I know you will be covering closely and superbly. Adam Credo at the Washington Free Beacon, really, as I say, required reading every day. I appreciate you sharing your views with us from time to time and hope you'll come back to us again soon. Next up, we'll take another step with another of our friends in the Fourth Estate, Richard Pollack from the Daily Caller. Get his read on what's happening here and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're going to continue our conversation with some of the people who are both deeply knowledgeable about and helping the rest of us understand what is going on with this seeming, well, some have called it soft coup, stealthy coup perhaps, against the presidency of Donald Trump being mounted from inside the intelligence community. Some former, some currently serving people, to hear Adam Credo tell it. A man who's got some extraordinary sources of his own and has been doing some extraordinary reporting on this subject as well is our next guest. He is Richard Pollack, the senior investigative reporter for another terrific online resource, The Daily Caller. He has been covering these issues for many years in a variety of places in the Fourth Estate, notably as a producer where I first met him back in the day at Good Morning America. He's also been a bureau chief for Washington for PJ Media and other outlets that I think have demonstrated his extraordinary understanding of some of the most complex issues and his ability to, as I say, explain them to the rest of us. Richard Pollack, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So you have been doing at the Daily Caller several pieces, Richard, that cite some prominent figures, many with experience inside the intelligence community, painting a very ominous picture of what's going on here. Tell us what your important points are from them.
Well, I was hearing this even before the National Security Advisor, Mike Flynn, was forced to resign earlier this week. The truth is that the intelligence community has declared war on the Trump administration, and there are active people within a number of intelligence agencies, the CIA, the National Security Agency, and believe it or not, the White House National Security Council, which is supposed to be the guiding council for the president about his foreign policy and military policy.
These are people who are actively subverting the agenda of the man who is the commander in chief of the United States. And it's an astonishing thing to say.
Yes. Yes. Really, what we have here is a situation where some of the nation's leading spy masters are turning their stagecraft away from enemy states and toward the White House. There is a disinformation campaign that our intelligence officials and officers are able to go and undertake in other societies and other cultures against, as I said, our enemies. But they are in an extraordinary departure, beginning to turn their guns onto the White House itself and turn their guns onto the American government. It is absolutely unprecedented and very, very worrying.
Well, it would sound like treason to me if the democratically elected government of the United States is now being actively subverted. And you're saying, if I understand this correctly, and again, you've got people who have been personally involved in the business of intelligence for some time talking to you about this, including some on the record, Richard, that it isn't just people who formerly were senior ranking people. What are you seeing in the way of people who are still actively inside the United States government, who have not chosen to resign if they had policy differences with the president, but are working against him inside his administration?
Yes, there are Democratic holdovers from the Obama administration that are in all parts of the intelligence community and all of their agencies. And there are also career bureaucrats. And these two groups have united, evidently, to really try to place a stake into the heart of the Trump presidency so early in this game. And this is really unprecedented, as I said. The idea that people who have taken the oath to defend our country and our Constitution are turning against it. It is of the greatest and gravest kind of threat that I think we've ever seen to any kind of American presidency. And there is a real serious effort by people to try to see if the intelligence community can be radically changed, because these folks are absolutely crossing the line to really attack the president and most of his advisors.
It goes beyond and gives new meaning to the term politicization of intelligence, doesn't it? Two points that I want to make sure we cover before we run out of time with you. And again, our guest is Richard Pollack of the Daily Caller. One is that you described Mike Flynn's rather defiant response to what happened to him and, you know, his holding to account some of the people who have been mounting this kind of hit job, you called it, and really a sophisticated disinformation offensive.
Yes, I had the opportunity to interview General Flynn on the day that he was forced to resign. And he made it very clear to me, first of all, that there are criminal acts underway by members of the intelligence community against this administration. He also felt very strongly that the entire intelligence community has to be reviewed and restructured. And it's very heartening to see that this morning the president has appointed Steven Feinberg, who is a very well-known person in the financial world, to get a task force and look top to bottom about this dysfunctional and potentially treasonous intelligence community that's supposed to serve the president, not to undermine him.
Well, to serve the country, obviously, and I'm sure that some who are engaged in what one of your sources, I think, put it, Richard, as organizing to topple the Trump presidency would think that they're actually looking out for the country and trying to remove this cancer on it. And yet we do have a democratic form of government that brought to power with the will of the people through the Electoral College and process Donald Trump, and he is now making his appointments and he is now articulating policy choices. I mean, in the past, and I had the privilege of serving some time ago, as you know, and exercised this option. When I disagreed with the policy, I resigned. And I would think that that would be what people who actually are committed to the country and people who are actually fulfilling and devoted to fulfilling their oath of office would do, rather than stay inside and try to engage in acts of subversion of this kind. You said, and I agree with you, we've not seen this before. The implications are ominous. You've described as one of the solutions, as will our next guest, Fred Flights, in a little bit more detail, the need for a house cleaning at the Central Intelligence Agency, and I guess the NSC as well. Do you see that in prospect, Richard Pollack?
Well, I'm very hopeful that the president is going to conduct a thorough house cleaning of the intelligence agencies. You know, they have been very dysfunctional over many years. They have gotten it wrong on major issues, including, I might add, everything from the Bay of Pigs to the fact that they claimed that there was weapons of mass destruction. And there's an infighting that's going on between these agencies that has, I think, made it probably even more dysfunctional than before September 11th. And we've all heard about what the problems were with the intelligence community and the FBI after a congressional report, the commission found it. But I think that this is really a sickness and a toxin within the government that has to be addressed. I thought that Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, did exactly the wrong way, which is what these other people are doing. She could have quietly resigned if she decided to dissent against the president's policies. Instead, she actively ordered all members of the Department of Justice, including the U.S. attorney's offices, to defy the president's executive order. And this is the kind of climate that we are seeing. People are not leaving. They have decided they're going to declare their own war against the president, and they're going to use their skills, their tactics, their disinformation programs, really to deep six this entire administration. I'll say one other thing. One of the people I interviewed said that actually the resignation of Mike Flynn was just a very minor scalp that they got, that they're really going for bigger scalps, and that they're hoping to take down the Trump administration.
Yeah, I think there's no getting around it. A frightening thought. Richard Pollack, your reporting on this at the Daily Caller is incredibly important. I know you'll keep it up, and I hope you will come back to us again soon with updates. Talk to you soon, my friend. Until then, be well. Next up, we'll speak with Fred Flights, career intelligence professional. How does this look from perspective of a man who's been inside the belly of the beast. That and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional who served for about 20 years in the Central Intelligence Agency, was a member of John Bolton's staff, including serving as his chief of staff at the State Department, and then went on to become a professional staff member of the House Intelligence Committee. A man who obviously has a lot to contribute to our musing about what has been going on of late with the intelligence community and its implications for our government, and particularly that of Donald Trump's administration. Fred Flights, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
I want to start with trying to get our hands around a term. We've been talking in previous segments with a couple of reporters who are following this very closely, and so I think have some of the background to the efforts to take down Mike Flynn and perhaps others, evidently being mounted by members of the intelligence community, certainly some previous members and perhaps some still serving. Fred, would you define for us a term that is now being used in these conversations, the deep state? What does that mean?
Well, the deep state is a term that is used by some people to claim that there is some type of permanent secret bureaucracy in the U.S. government run by the intelligence community and perhaps people within the State Department and the DOD, and they fight vociferously to protect their jobs and mandates and to resist control by the president and the president's appointees.
Do you think it's a credible characterization of the sort of permanent bureaucracy?
Well, I have a slightly different take. I do think that there are professionals in government who resist presidents, especially Republican presidents. I don't like this term because it is something that is used too much by Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald to promote attacks on the civil liberties of Americans. I do think there are a large number of officials in the intelligence community who were named or promoted by the Obama administration who are working against this president. I don't think this represents an effort from administration to administration. But I'll tell you, having worked in the intelligence community for 25 years, there was a pronounced liberal bias in efforts to undermine Republican presidents. It was always below the surface. I take a slightly different take, but I do admit there's a serious problem.
And is there any question in your mind, based on the kind of reporting that we've just been discussing with Adam Credo and Richard Pollack? There are also important pieces out there by Patrick Poole and George Risley and others about what seems to be a deliberate campaign on the part of some of these, and I think you're right to make it clear, it's not obviously all members of the intelligence community, thank God. But Fred, given what you know, is it likely that some of what's being done here involves the improper use, in fact, the dangerous abuse of classified information and intelligence collection techniques, notably in the case of Mike Flynn, but perhaps in prospect with others?
I think there's no question about that. And I believe it is being done by former Obama officials, people who just left. And I got to say, I think former CIA Director John Brennan is my top suspect for some of these leaks. The former officials are leaking things that they probably asked to be collected against Flynn and Trump before they left office. And their former aides and deputies and people who they handpicked into senior positions are leaking now to hurt this president. And I mean, this communication between Flynn and the Russian foreign minister is a key example of that. This was extremely sensitive information. Anything that involves the personal communications of an American citizen that's caught up in intelligence collection, that is among the most highly held intelligence. And the fact that a transcript of this apparently was widely disseminated is a gross violation of the rules governing our intelligence agencies.
One of the things that's been reported, Fred, which may be contributing to this, is that President Obama apparently late in his administration decided to considerably expand the number of people who could have access to signals intelligence information. And the, again, as you say, some of the most closely held until now for reasons that I think have as much to do with the perishability of the means by which we collect that information as it does with concerns about the civil liberties and so on of American citizens. But talk a little bit about, has this created conditions that lend themselves to this kind of abuse?
Well, I've been looking at this and discussing with a number of people. What Obama did, NSA usually takes an intercepted communication and gists it and summarizes it. They don't give the whole thing. And as an intelligence analyst, I found that frustrating because I don't know what was left on the cutting room floor. So Obama changed that rule. Obama also changed the rule so more individuals would have access to this information, even though it's very sensitive. The first change might have been justified. The second one I'm troubled by because it was making very sensitive intelligence available to a wider array of people, most of whom did not need it. Now, we don't know whether this involved the transcript of Flynn's phone call. I haven't seen that yet, but I think this has to be looked into because if that was the result of Obama's decision, it really represents a serious threat to the civil liberties of every American.
Mm. Fred Flights, would you just talk a little bit about this issue of sources and methods, as they call it, the dangers of having through the unauthorized, especially, but certainly indiscreet use of the take, as they say, of such collection, you may actually lose the means by which you've acquired it.
Yes, sources and methods are far more sensitive than the actual piece of intelligence they produce. Some of these sources and methods cost billions to develop. Lives can be lost when these sources and methods are compromised. And, enemies in the United States, all they have to know is that we're able to collect such a thing, and then they'll use some other method to communicate or to push forward their agendas. And then we had to spend $1 billion again to develop a new system. It's very costly. I mean, that's the major reason why I think Edward Snowden is such a traitor, because he cost the taxpayer billions of dollars and put lives at risk. And that may have happened with these decisions by President Obama concerning NSA.
We don't know for sure that kind of damage has happened, but the kind of care that should be exercised and that, you know, is obligatory for people who have access to this information has, of course, made violations of those arrangements felony offenses. And it remains to be seen whether anyone will be held accountable for that kind of punishment. Let me ask you, Fred, about this Wall Street Journal piece. I gather the Office of Director of National Intelligence has refuted it, but there is nonetheless being pushed out, and some are calling it an active disinformation campaign being orchestrated out of the so-called deep state, certainly the intelligence agencies that you have implicated in this. When you hear the intelligence agencies suggesting that they believe they cannot trust the President of the United States to have access to such information, what, again, as a career professional in the field, what does that say to you about loyalties and doing their job?
Well, first of all, I want to say I question whether this story is accurate. I don't think that CIA Director Pompeo or the Director of National Intelligence would tolerate this, but I find it deeply troubling that career intelligence officers who are in place right now are making this claim. And this shows the urgency that Trump has to get his people into these agencies, remove all the acting deputies named by the Obama administration, pull the clearances of former Obama officials who are not only using this information to hurt Trump, but they're making money with their clearances with Beltway bandits. It's urgent that the swamp be drained in these agencies, and I think it can be drained. I know a lot of people are wringing their hands saying that this is impossible. I know it's possible. The offices that are leaking, they can be isolated. We can find other offices. There's a lot of loyal Americans that want to work for the U.S. government and the CIA. If the people there won't do their jobs, they can be fired. The CIA director can fire anyone he wants just because he wants to. They don't have emergency protection keeping their job. That may be necessary to drain the swamp here.
Well, it's a credibly important point, Fred Flights, and said with the voice of experience from inside the belly of the beast over many years. I appreciate your insights and, of course, the work you're doing these days as the Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs at the Center for Security Policy. I know you'll keep it up and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Bruce Bechtel joins us, one of the country's preeminent experts on the Hermit Kingdom, North Korea, what it's up to, who it's killing, and who it may threaten to kill next. Could it be you? That and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. It's a great pleasure to have with us, and a privilege, really, given the demands on his time, especially at a moment when the country in which he is one of the nation's preeminent authorities is once again in the news, namely North Korea. But to catch up with Dr. Bruce Bechtel is always a treat, but most especially when we have to figure out what to make of the news, and in particular, what it might mean for our security. Dr. Bruce Bechtel is the professor of political science at Angelo State University, who's formerly served as an intelligence officer with the United States Marine Corps, one of their specialists at the Defense Intelligence Agency on Korea, the peninsula, the threats from the North in particular. He has written extensively on these subjects and has been really one of the go-to guys on such matters, including with his book, North Korea and Regional Security in the Kim Jong-un Era, A New International Security Dilemma. Dr. Bechtel, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank. This is my favorite radio show to come on.
Well, bless you. It's our favorite radio show to have you come on, so that's perfect. Listen, Bruce, there has been a new perturbation in the force with the North Koreans, we think. Talk, if you would, about what we know and what you surmise is going on with respect to the seeming assassination of a relative of Kim Jong-un in Malaysia.
Well, according to all of the reports that I've seen, you know, now that things have had a few days to calm down, it appears that based on actual witnesses, two very attractive young Asian women, who I'm quite sure were North Korean agents, snuck up behind him. One grabbed him, the other put a handkerchief over his mouth with a liquid on it that now we're being told was more powerful than most other drugs, and killed him very quickly. So this appears to be an old-style Cold War assassination successfully done, something they've really been planning to do, I think, since early 2012, because Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother who's the older brother of Kim Jong-un, has been very outspoken against the regime since almost the very beginning.
Yeah, and he defected, as I understand it, right?
Well, no, he didn't defect. In fact, at least for a while into the Kim Jong-un regime, they had him on an allowance, if you can believe that. But he was being protected when he was in Chinese territory, including Macau, by the Chinese government, because they were quite afraid that he would be assassinated. And so he traveled to Malaysia. I'm shocked, frankly, that he did not have his slew of bodyguards with him, as he typically does, because according to the reports, he was just traveling by himself and was in the economy line to travel back via aircraft to Macau from Malaysia.
Well, this is a story that is rich with some of the personal predilections of Kim Jong-un, about which you have written extensively, Bruce Bechtel. Should, if it is in fact proven that this is a political assassination, us revisit under President Trump's leadership decisions that were previously made to remove this heinous regime from the state sponsor of terrorism list and otherwise treat them really as the pariah that such a designation makes clear is in order?
I absolutely agree with that, Frank. I mean, this is just another example of North Korea showing, you know, terrorism, sponsoring terrorism, actually conducting terrorism acts is something that it conducts routinely as a matter of regime policy, but not just because of this. I mean, they proliferated since, you know, the mid-2000s to Hezbollah, Hamas, the IRGC in Iran. You know, even Secretary Gates noted that in open sources in 2010 in a speech that he gave. Everybody knows that North Korea is one of the biggest state sponsors of terrorism on the planet. And, you know, God only knows what the political reasons were that the Obama administration did not put them back on that list. But one hopes that the Trump administration will put them back on the list. They should be called a state sponsor of terrorism because that's what they are.
Well, Bruce, remind us, as you just said, that it would have fallen to the Obama administration to put them back on the list because the George W. Bush administration took them off the state sponsor of terrorism list. Remind us why that was done and what flowed from that decision.
Well, that was done back in 2007 as the agreement was signed for North Korea to dismantle their nuclear weapons program. And obviously they did not do that, but that was part of the deal. We successfully were able to box North Korea into a corner with our Patriot Act initiation against financial initiatives that they had all over Asia. And that really put them in an economic hurt locker and brought them back to the bargaining table. But unfortunately, the Bush administration made what I felt was a very bad deal, because part of that deal with North Korea agreeing to dismantle its nuclear weapons, which of course they never did, was that we would take them off the list, the State Department list of nations sponsoring terrorism. And, you know, at the time I wrote in my first book, Red Rogue, that, you know, we should, no matter what deal we were making with the North Koreans, we should not take them off a list of nations sponsoring terrorism unless they actually stop sponsoring terrorism.
That's right. And as in so many other instances, and you've chronicled many of them over the years, Bruce Bechtel, we've been basically given a flim-flam in these international agreements. There's been no break, as best I can tell, on their nuclear weapons programs or on their proliferation of all kinds of weaponry. One of the particular concerns at the moment, as you know so well, is that they are feverishly building and improving their ballistic missile capabilities, something that is one of their cash crops also. But it's bad enough what they're doing in their own right in that regard. Tell us a little bit, as you see it, as a former Marine intelligence officer, how that threat is beginning to emerge as a real problem for our friends and our forces in Asia and perhaps for those of us further away as well.
Good question, Frank. I hope everybody's taking this missile test that they did Saturday very seriously, because what we saw was essentially a land variant of a missile that they tested very successfully a few months ago. It's a solid-fueled variant of a submarine-launched ballistic missile that goes in a submarine that now has blue water range, and the missile now has the range, I'm guessing, the underwater missile appears to have the range of about 1,700 kilometers, which means they could move that submarine to within range of Hawaii or Guam, where we have 165,000 Americans, and just fire it with a nuclear warhead. And the missile itself looks very much like and has almost the exact capabilities as the Chinese JL-1. Now, there's no smoking gun yet that says they actually got it from the Chinese. They could have got it from a third party like Pakistan or Iran. They could have stolen the plans or something else, but it does appear very similar to that missile. And so what they've shown us is they're well on their way to developing what we used to call the triad during the Cold War. They now have a missile that can go after us on land, the KN-08 and the KN-14 and the Taepodong, of course. And it appears they're well on their way to having a missile with a nuclear capability that can go after Hawaii or Guam with a submarine-launched ballistic missile system. So this land-based system that we saw on Saturday is a variant of that that could attack Japan, all U.S. military bases on Japan, Tokyo, etc., and they can move it around much more quickly because it's solid-fueled, not liquid-fueled. It gets fueled in about one-tenth the time. So what we're seeing is just another new system that the North Koreans have that they can use to threaten us.
Yeah. Earlier this week, a friend of yours and mine, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, has written a new piece in the Washington Times sort of summarizing many of these threats. And I hope that particularly the Trump administration is going to be taking these very seriously. The president has indicated that an ICBM is not going to happen if the North Koreans decide to pursue that. But some of the capabilities that you've just talked about would be bad enough were they ever to be used against us. Bruce, we have to leave it at that for the moment. A lot more to talk about. I hope we'll have a chance to do so with you in the near future. In the meantime, thank you for the work you're doing. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.